Mick Warhurst.
Weekdays on ABC Radio, online and on the ABC Listen app.
How do you capture the essence of an entire life in less than 1,000 words? Well, there is a real art to obituary writing. They provide us with a peep into the lives and sometimes secrets of others. Digital journalist Jennifer King is fascinated by obituaries. She's going to teach us how to write a good one. And joining us from Morocco is freelance obituary writer Tim Bullimore. Welcome, Tim.
Hello, thank you very much.
What makes a good obituary? And why are they so important?
What makes a good obituary is like what makes any news story, whether on radio or television or newspaper, something that makes you think, turn your head and think, what? Is that true? Did I hear that? Good grief. Yeah, if you want to put in the colloquial, it's the F me factor. Flip me. Did you know that? Not that they've died, but they've done this with their life. Whatever this might be, it's just a story, something that makes you think, wow.
Yeah, that's true. I think someone famous can die and you maybe know about their politics or their music, that sort of thing, but an obit can sometimes give you a little morsel of something you had absolutely no idea that about that person. So it sheds new light on them. And I think a thing that nobody really appreciates is that obits are not about death. They're all about life and life stories and people's life stories. So that's what's really important to remember.
And why are they so important? Does everyone deserve a story told about them?
I don't know if everybody deserves a story. Everybody has a story, of course, but it's whether it's something that will grip the reader, something unusual, something different. Yes, as Jennifer says, there are famous people, royalty, showbiz, whatever, and we'll know a lot about their public lives, but we often don't know about their less public lives. But some of the best stories are people who you and I have never heard of until they die. There was a piece in the London Times this week about a lady who had been a Peter Gabriel's agent, who'd been a management consultant, a banker, and latterly was the Queen's representative, but deputy Lord Lieutenant of part of London. But what nobody knew until she died, she was a prostitute's daughter who'd been brought up in care homes and social services. Yeah, she'd come a long way with her life.
That one the Telegraph did, Tim, about the homeless woman in a part of London. So everybody knew this woman. They knew her face. Mm-hmm. They knew her. And then she died and they did an obituary. And then people knew the story behind the face that they had seen around the streets of London. So it's fantastic.
It's an opportunity to celebrate that person, whether you know them or not, but also learn a little bit more about that person. Is that what interested you about writing obituaries? I'll start with you, Tim.
Well, what interested me about writing obituaries was this opportunity to tell a life story in the thousand or so words and to bring out the unusual and the interesting. And I just love the fact that there's so many interesting stories waiting to be told. Even famous people have got untold stories, and non-famous people, as Jeff was mentioning, the pianist who lived in the bushes, a homeless lady for 30-odd years, and there's a wonderful story behind her. It's terribly tragic, but just telling people stories. Problem with if you get the rich and the famous all the time is you get the perfect trajectory of life. You're born into a well-to-do family, well-educated, everything goes well, do proper city jobs or big banking jobs or establishment things, nice pension, happily married, two children, lived happily ever after. Well, most people's lives ain't that like that. There's not many people on this planet who haven't had a broken heart, a points in their driving license, small conviction, something gone wrong, lost a job. We've all had our ups and downs. So I like to tell the stories as they are, the ups and downs, including the famous people. I remember John Gielgud's obituary, the great actor. He went to huge lengths to try and avoid any mention of being fined for importuning, as they used to call it, in a gentleman's lavatory. Well, yes, it was sad for him, but it was nice in some way to show that he was human. He did things wrong as well.
And that's the thing with an obituary too. I mean, the subject of the obituary is now dead, so they can't sue you. So, I mean, not that it should be an opportunity. It shouldn't be an opportunity to bring out horrible, dirty washing, but you can say things that perhaps the person did try to keep secret all their lives, and it adds another layer to their otherwise, inverted commas, perfect life. You think, oh, they actually were human, or they had human faults like that are relatable.
How did you both start writing obituaries?
I started many years ago. I had a background in classical music, and I worked for a pianist who was a pupil of Dmitri Shostakovich. Her name was Tatiana Nikolaeva, a Russian pianist. And she possibly been a bit more than a pupil of Shostakovich, a nice young lady, keyboard, him the older man, a teacher, composer. And I looked after her for a few years as her agent. And she was playing concert in San Francisco, and she suffered a cerebral hemorrhage at the keyboard in the middle of the concert. And a friend from the BBC very kindly told me, rang me and said, your friend Tatiana's died. So I rang the London newspapers and said, you've got to do an obituary, this wonderful pianist. And a nice lady at the London Times said, well, if you want an obituary, why don't you write it and send it to us? So I did. They published it. And best of all, a check came in the post.
Simple as that, hey? How about you, Jennifer?
Well, I have been a nurse for 30 years, and I just one of these people who change careers late in life. And so I'd always loved talking to my patients and hearing their life stories. So when I was doing my master's for my thesis, I thought, oh, well, I'll write about obituaries and how they're moving from the print, newspapers onto a digital platform, which was all happening back then. So that's how I started, and that's how I met Tim. And I was incredibly lucky one day when Tim was actually visiting my home, and with my husband and I, he was staying for the weekend, and a famous musician died while Tim was staying at our house. And so I was able to sit in and help Tim gather information and just watch the master at work. It was the most amazing experience. I want to do it again and again and again, because I learned so much from just that morning of watching him gather information about this person.
That's incredible. So you are friends over writing obituaries?
Yes.
It was like a pop masterclass. I got word that this very famous cellist, Janos Starker, had died, and I wasn't going to, even though I was 1,000 miles from home, I wasn't going to let anyone else do it. I wanted to write this guy's obituary. I'd met him, I'd heard him. And so with Jennifer's great help and her wireless account on the internet, we were able to work on it together. Ah. And it was great fun. I often end up writing pieces on the move. I once dictated a pianist obituary from Larnaca Airport in Cyprus in the old days when you dictated copy to newspapers. I've written pieces on aircraft and deserts here in Morocco, back home in Britain, anywhere.
Don't they say death waits for no man?
Exactly.
Or woman, that's correct. I am talking to Tim Bullimore and Jennifer King about writing obituaries. Now, you two, I would love to get you to read perhaps a part from one of your favourite obituaries, if you could.
Yes, Tim, you must have many favourites. I've got so many, it was kind of hard to decide which one to have. But I will say this, Miff, that it is obits in Australia are not as big a thing as they are internationally. So, I mean, this obit I'm going to read is an international obit. Yes, there are obits published in Australia, but a lot of them are not quite as engaging. You know, it's still a new thing, I think, or something unfamiliar to Australian people, Australian audiences. So anyway, this one is from The Telegraph in London, which does eccentric people really well. And it's for, I'll read the first couple of lines, because that is really the essence of the obit, is to capture the person in the first couple of lines, and then that hooks the reader in and they stay with the story. Chris Dale, who has died aged 49, was a 6'6" mountaineer with a passion for solo climbs among the hardest peaks of Scotland, Wales and the Alps. He was also an equally enthusiastic cross-dresser who went by the name of Crystal. And so you think, oh my gosh, he's 6'6", he's climbing mountains and he's cross-dressing.
I love it. I'm instantly hooked and I want to hear that story.
And then here's another really good one from the Washington Post. This is the beginning of this one for a young woman, a woman called Freddie Overstegen, a Dutch resistance fighter. She was 14 when she joined the Dutch resistance, though with her long dark hair in braids, she looked at least 2 years younger. When she rode her bicycle down the streets of Haarlem in North Holland, firearms hidden in a basket, Nazi officials rarely stopped to question her. When she walked through the woods, serving as a lookout or seductively leading her SS target to a secluded place, there was little indication that she carried a handgun and was preparing an execution.
Wow.
And that's you're just like,
incredible.
What?
Incredible.
And the other thing is, I mean, she probably came across as a sweet old lady, and people who knew her when she, at the end of her life, would never know that she was an assassin at 16 or 14.
That's amazing. Tim, have you got one for us?
She was a remarkable one. I actually wrote her for one of the London newspapers as well. We've been doing some interesting things. The London Times, last Saturday for Armistice Weekend, we ran an obituary of Wilfred Owen, the poet, with a little apology for being 100 years late. A 3,000-word obituary, which was just a remarkable thing. And given that Jennifer's reading European obits from over there, one of my favourites I wrote was Daisy Cadibill, for the whose story was made into the film Rabbit Proof Fence. The stars came out when Hollywood came to Jigalong, Australia, in 2002, and not only those in the sky. The red carpet was made of dust while the chosen scent was escaped by Calvin Klein. Yet the real stars of the evening just wanted to go home. And I think you probably know the start story quite well.
Yes.
Another favourite of mine was one which one of the great orchestral conductor a few years ago, and he invited me to his home to talk about his obituary. A lot of people don't do this. They think it's jinxed or they don't like to face their own mortality. But Sir Colin Davis, who died aged 85, this was in 2013, was one of the grand and cerebral orchestras of the English tradition. Orchestral conductors of the English tradition. He inherited his baton directly from Thomas Beecham, and regardless of fashionable popularity, stuck resolutely to understated elegance, both on and off the performance. But the best paragraph comes much later on, when we get to in the first floor drawing room of his elegant townhouse in North London. Colin Davis would sit doing his knitting. He kept a life-size skeleton, which sat gazing fixedly at the youngsters below, kicking balls around Highbury Fields. Just a reminder, the softly spoken maestro would tell visiting journalists, leaving the words hanging uncomfortably in the air.
See, that's fantastic, Tim, that he's a conductor and he's knitting on the side like that. I mean, that's
and terrifying children.
Yeah, these little jewels of information. And that Daisy one that you read, Tim, that sounds so great. I'm going to go and Google it and launch my
times. Yes.
I love how excited the both of you, Jennifer and Tim, who write obituaries, I love how excited you get about other people's obituaries. Is there a holy grail that you can reach when it comes to obituary writing?
I mean, for me, my holy grail is that the very first obit I ever wrote while I was still a student was published at the top of ABC News online for Dame Elizabeth Murdoch. And that is, like, for me, my holy grail was my very first obit. I mean, of course, it's going to, you know, I'm going to keep writing them and there'll be others, but that's, for me, pretty special.
Yep.
What about you, Tim?
I don't know about reaching a holy grail. I mentioned my first one, which was very special to me. But I write four or five, sometimes six a week. I write advanced ones when people aren't dead yet. I write for the Times and the Daily Telegraph. And I'm just always trying to improve on what's gone before this. I suppose I'm always find the challenge of the awkward situation. So there's a orchestral conductor, Richard Hickox, who dropped dead, and I was on a train from Cardiff to London, which is only about 2 hours, and I had to write this piece before I got to London. And as I got into London, I hit the send button, and it was in the next day's paper. And it's things like that where you're living dangerously, I suppose. They're the most fun ones. And, you know, you can prepare an obituary in advance, and it sits in the morgue, as we call it, or can, waiting to come out. And, of course, you spend ages working on it, smoothing it, getting it perfect. You know, there's nothing, no diamond shines as brightly as the obituary or the diamond that's polished roughly in a hurry on the day.
Really?
That's exactly right. It's the New York Times has 1,200 or so obits in their morgue. And I know that I'm sure the Times does too, and the Telegraph in London. They just have them all ready to go. You just pull them out as soon as you hear that.
Yes. But first of all, you never have the piece ready that you think you ought to have. So somebody's really ill or really old, and then they live forever, or it seems like it, once you've got a piece perfectly written. And then, or you get the one that you were ready for, and it's a big name, and you open up the file, it says, Joe Smith writing 1997, yet to deliver. You think, oh no. nobody bothered to check. What happened to me once when John Gielgud died, I mentioned him earlier. John Gielgud, opened up the can. He was written in the 1960s and nobody had updated. It was 300 words. And it was Sunday afternoon. I was on my own. So the morgue is a wonderful place, but it's not perfect.
And there's a theory out there that the more prepared the obituary is, the longer the person will live and you won't be needing it. You know, Fidel Castro's obit at the New York Times was first prepared 50 years before he died. So I think they did a big story about it and they had to keep bringing it out and updating it, bringing it out and updating it. We all know about the Queen. I mean, everyone's got something prepared for her.
I wouldn't comment on that. But the myth is that the Queen Elizabeth, the Queen Mother, was first written in 1923 when she was engaged to Prince Albert, who became Duke of York, who became George VI. And of course, she spent 50 years after his death as the Queen Mother, died in 2002. And yet, there's still a screw up on the day, as it were, to get the obit in the page, but it happened eventually.
I don't mean to be grim, and in asking this, I don't feel like you'll be bothered by this question, given the field in which you work, which is obituaries. Have you written an obituary for yourself? Or would you let somebody else write one for you?
Gee, Tim, I could write one for you.
Thanks, Jen.
Yeah, no, I've not written one for me. I don't feel like I've done enough remarkable stuff yet, but certainly I think Tim would be worthy of an obit. He's a good story.
I don't care. I won't be here to read it. What I'd love to do is leave a great debate behind among editors, scrapping and fighting about whether I should damn well get one or not. I just like to leave a lot of trouble in my wake.
Very nice. Great response. Thank you both of you, Jennifer and Tim, for your time today.
Thank you, Miff.
Thanks, Miff.
That's Jennifer King, who is a member of the Society of Professional Obituary Writers and UK-based freelance writer Tim Bullimore.